begins again.
And welcome to the show. How you hooligans doing out there? Again, like I start off every show, don't forget to go over to hooliganbikers.com, B-I-K-E-R.com. Check out all my editorials. That site is just lit up, man. The discussions over there is great. Great. Can't thank you guys enough. Also, HarleyLiberty.com. Don't forget your biker news every morning. Today's show, we are going to go back in time and check out some of the most pivotal events that happened within the motorcycle club scene. Now, when I say pivotal events, I mean stuff that just lit up the news and lit up a lot of what we think about, how can I say this, what these new jacks think bikers are about and where they got their reputation, all that type of stuff. That's the stuff we're going to cover. Today, we're going to cover the Rock Machine and the Hells Angels during the Quebec War. Boy, if you are around in the 90s, you heard all about this stuff. And I know all my Canadian audience knows about this war. Now, why am I talking about something that happened up there? Well, it just goes to show you the type of mentality that was happening in the 90s. Now, you had the big Quebec War. You had some stuff happen in Australia, the Milpara massacre that happened in the early 80s between, I believe it was the Comancheros and the Bandidos. If I'm wrong, don't kill me on that. I got to look it up. I'm just going off the cuff here. Then, of course, we had some stuff going here in Chicago and all over the place. But it was a different time and different places than it is now. And you'll kind of see how things have changed because a lot of people get culture shock over about something that happened in Waco per se. Now, it was awful, but it isn't as bad as it could have been back then. Again, the mentality is totally different today than it was back then. It was a lot more hardcore. And when you lived the life, you lived the life back then. So let's get to the program. And don't forget, man, shoot your comments below in the show notes and all that good stuff. Let me know what you guys think about this. Again, this is going to be one of our first series in the history of what's happening in the club scene, man. Montreal Gazette. And they're talking about, you know, it was the 25th year anniversary, July 13th of this year, when everything started. On July 13th, 1994, in the aftermath of the ultimatum issued by the Hells Angels, three men walked into a motorcycle shop and killed Pierre Doyce. Again, my French stinks, so give me a break, okay? Anyway, you know, you'll see a little bit of the surveillance video back then. This was July 20th, 1994. And what happened in, from my understanding anyway, in Canada was the HA gave all the freaking clubs, all the dealers that were dealing some stuff up there an ultimatum, buy through us or face the consequences. So what happened was the Rock Machine formed and what was also called the Alliance. Now, they didn't wear regular patches. Half of them didn't even ride bikes. What they did, they wore rings with the eagle head on it. And that's how you were able to identify them, was with them rings. But the Alliance and the Hells Angels went back and forth killing each other, and it was pretty bad up there. It goes on to say the Quebec Biker War was already hatching, but it started from July 13th because that was the first murder. Again, the guy named Pierre in his Harley shop, and after that it was clear the war begun. Norman, a former rival of the Hells Angels, testifying in court in 96 after becoming an informant in a murder conspiracy case, And it talks about the three men walked into the shop and they killed Pierre. Dulce was a 34-year-old member of the Hell's Angel support club called the Death Riders, was working in this custom cycle shop when the three men, whose faces were hidden by masks and motorcycle helmet, called out to him twice to make sure they had the right guy. They proceeded to pump at least 16 bullets into him, who was taken to a hospital and declared dead hours later. You think with 16 bullets? The murder received little media attention, but to many people involved in the drug trafficking in Montreal, a very clear message had been sent. In the months leading up to his death, the Hells Angels issued an ultimatum. With very few exceptions, anyone dealing drugs in Montreal will have to buy from them or else. Now, right there is where a lot, and this happens in the United States too, but incidences like that war happening up in Canada and some of the wars down here, that's what gives the media their freaking juice to go after clubs, is what happens in the past. Now, what happened in the past is the past. It don't mean it happens today. A lot of these clubs nowadays, they're not involved in it because Rico stinks, man. They know they're going to be targeted. So what happens is you get a lot of guys that go off on their own and do their own thing. It wasn't like that up there, at least in Canada in the 90s. It was some gangster stuff happening out there. A lot of bad things were happening. I remember like yesterday reading all the news things like Biker News Network, you know, that was around in the 90s. We used to see it all coming across the screens and stuff, what was going on. Several leaders of criminal organizations opposed the ultimatum, met weeks before the dude was killed. They decided to band together and form a group they called the Alliance. The Alliance's disdain for the Hell's Angel attitude touched off a conflict that continued until 2002 and resulted in the deaths. Now get this. Resulted in the deaths of more than 160 people, including several innocent victims. Again, I told you, this was no joke up there. Yeah, you might get 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe all the way up to 10 in a war spread over time. But this right here was over, what was it, almost 8 years, 160 people were killed? Wasn't playing up there. The Alliance acted swiftly during the summer of 94, the day after he was killed. Someone tried to kill Norman Rebellity, or Rebellity, I don't know, you guys will correct me anyway. A member of Hell's Angels support club, he survived the shooting and would go on to become one of the Hell's Angels' most powerful members in Quebec. On the same day the attempt was made on his life, Quebec announced they had arrested five members of the Rock Machine, one of the dominant groups in the Alliance, after uncovering a plot to blow up the South Shore clubhouse of a Hell's Angel support club called the Evil Ones. By the way, if any of these support clubs are still around or any of that, let me know, guys from Canada. On July 15th, 94, 2 days after the killing, high-ranking members of the Hell's Angels from chapters across Quebec met at a hotel. Hell, 5 days later, police managed to record video images of several Hell's Angels make quick visits to the gang bunker in Sorel. With the benefit of hindsight supplied, a member of the Hell's Angels who became a police informant several years later, the police learned the meetings were used to inform Hell's Angels across Quebec that each chapter would have to take a vote on whether or not they wanted to take part in the war. And there you got Boucher, whatever his damn name is, waves to the police. And if you're watching this on YouTube or any of your video platforms, you'll see that. It goes on to talk about how he was recorded in images of a guy named Mom. He was the leading member of the gang's Montreal chapter. Notice he was being filmed. He paused, turned the camera, and smiled as he waved the officers. And by the end of August, members of all four Hell's Angels chaptered in Quebec at the time voted unanimously in favor of going to war. The vote spread the biker war across Quebec and meant the Hells Angels Montreal chapter had much more support than the Alliance. By 99, the Alliance was left decimated. During the summer of that year, the Rock Machine became probationary members of the Bandidos, a U.S.-based outlaw motorcycle gang that, like the Hells Angels, had chapters all over the world. In the months that followed, the Hells Angels approached the Quebec Bandidos and offered a truce. The peace officer had an agenda behind it. The Hells Angels in Quebec wanted to prevent the Bandidos from expanding any further in Canada, especially into Ontario. During the fall of 2000, they used the truce as an opportunity to convince several members of the probationary Bandidos to defect from their side. Now, we're going to, and that's when the Rock Machine officially joined the Ditos, is on 2001. Now, that's when they're gone, but now in, I think it was 2010, 2012, the Rock Machine came reabout, and now I hear they're a big force in Australia, Canada, Europe. You know, you got a couple of them in chapters in the United States, so they seem to be going on again. But there's the interesting thing. We just talked about the Rock Machine, some of the members transferring over to the Bandidos. This, you know, this was written in 2016, so it would have been 2006 around there. There was the Bandido Massacre, an execution assembly line wiped out the entire Toronto guy chapter. It goes on to say nicknames like Whiner, Boxer Taz, Little Mikey, Bam Bam, Chopper, and Crash. They were all connected, whether as members, associates, or just hanger-ons, to the Toronto chapter of the Bandidos Motorcycle Club. On the night of Friday, April 7, 2006, some became murderers and others their victims in what remains Ontario's worst mass killing in modern times. Basically, they turned on each other. And that massacre right there can be the equivalent to, it's not as set up as it was, but the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in Chicago. It was just a bloodbath, and let's keep on going on. The circumstances in which seven men lured eight bikers to a southwestern Ontario farm to be summarily executed sounds like something out of Hollywood, but it wasn't. Those events were real, and both police and bikers say the Bandido Massacre changed the balance of power in the Canadian underworld. They were orchestrated by Wayne Wiener Calistine, a former president of the Bandidos Toronto chapter. He had become convinced that he could seize control of the U.S.-based biker gang's Canadian operation, a lucrative trade in methamphetamine. And yes, it goes all the way back then. And everybody knows I can't stand meth. It just kills the biker image. It's not what a lot of motorcycle club members are about. And it's not what a lot of 1%er bikers are about. But I got to admit, back then it was some hardcore stuff going on back in the 90s. Again, I'll be honest about that. It was. But you still have a lot of people nowadays living off that reputation of back then when it's nowhere near the type of people in there now. He was arrested within days of the executions. An appellate court called it the assembly line execution. Here it's giving you some of the people that were involved and killed. The self-styled No Surrender crew didn't have a clubhouse of their own either. It is ran a lot different up in Canada than it is here in the United States. Again, you guys from Canada can let me know what you're thinking about this. I know some clubs up there do not need motorcycles. Yes, you have a motorcycle club, but you don't need motorcycles. I think that goes back and harkens to the day of the Alliance when you had sporadic organizations joining this alliance, and some of them weren't motorcycle clubs. But again, you have a different culture up in Canada, you have a different culture in Australia, you have a different culture in Europe than you do in the United States. What we might find messed up, they find as regular. So remember that when you're looking at this kind of stuff. Then it goes in, and again, they talk about the surrender crew. The men joke, made small talk. But this was really a huge massacre that happened up there in Canada. But now let's get to the modern day rock machine. This was written on, let's see here, September 29th of this year. According to 7 News Australia, Canadian outlaw motorcycle gang Rock Machine expanded into Australia. So you can see that they're on a proper fitting and they're ready to go. They're expanding, they're doing their deals, the whole nine yards. There was recent arrest in South Australia confirming the Rock Machine outlaw motorcycle gang. Again, this is the news. This ain't me saying it, guys, so don't get up my butt on it. An import from Canada has expanded into Australia. Among those arrested by SA police in the past few weeks have been men alleged to be the gang's local president and secretary. The alleged president, 41-year-old Alexander Illich, has been charged with drugs and firearm offensive. Man, he's pretty young for a president. Anyway, the secretary, who is yet to be identified, has been charged with drug trafficking and will face court next month. Then it goes into the local arrest. You can see all the stuff going on with what they seized. Then it goes into the history. Australia has a long history of outlaw motorcycle gang imports. The Hells Angels were the first, bringing with them the family recipe for amphetamines honed in drug labs of California. Now, you know, I can't see drug labs in Cali because the cost of transportation and all that, you wouldn't make no money on the other end of the pond, man. That stuff's local. It was the birth of an epidemic that has gripped the nation in recent decades. Next came the Bandidos, whose first public appearance was at the Milpira Massacre on Father's Day, 84. Now, you notice these dates, man, mid-90s, mid-80s, whole different biker back then, man. Those were the bikers when it wasn't cool to be a biker before the rub invasion and all that type of stuff kind of started changing opinions of what bikers thought of themselves. No joke in the 90s and 80s, man. I would have to contend the 70s and 60s weren't as bad as the 80s and 90s. That's really when it started hitting hardcore. 7 people died, including a 14-year-old kid, in that deal with Milpira. Let's see here. More recently, the Mongos came over. Of course, they give them a description of the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol. But the Rock Machine is similar to Sydney's notorious outlaw gang, nicknamed Nike Bikies. Or Nike Bikies, because of their penchant for fashion footwear, good personal hygiene, and frequent gym visits. Now, I actually have an article coming out, and by the time you'll see this, it talks about the biker gangster and the styles, the whole nine yards, their way of thinking, how they differ from the traditional biker. Going to be out on hooliganbiker.com, so go over there and check it out. But it gets into this type of stuff with the way things, you know, are looked on different. It was founded in Quebec as competition. We went over all that type of stuff. The Angels were allied to the Rosado Mafia crime family. Portrayed in the TV series Bad Blood. I guess it talks about that. The dwindling membership talks about how the biker war decimated the Rock Machine and the last attempt at survival was a merger. We talked about that. But then it started going out. First reports of it came out of Perth in 2009, which is 10 years ago. 2013, Task Force Echo reported the Rock Machine was aligned with the Bandidos in Victoria and had around 5 chapters in Aussie. And then they've been below the radar for a few years. The Rock Machine's back. They popped up back after that war. I do understand that some that were in that war, I think, helped reestablish the Rock Machine in 2016. So that is a little history right there of the 1990s with the Rock Machine and the Hells Angels Quebec War. I often talk about how it would be great to see clubs come together. On one hand, that would be awesome. On the other hand, I know that's never going to happen because of the history with some of these motorcycle clubs. Take, for example, the Rock Machine and the Hells Angels. Over 160 people died. There was a massacre when they flipped to the Bandidos from within, which is a sad deal. But when it comes to the streets, money, that kind of stuff happens. It's sad, but it does. So I don't think, is it ever possible? Yeah, it's possible, but you got to get everybody at a table, kind of like you had the New York families do early in the 20s. But it's a different way of thinking now than it was back then. Real different way of thinking. A lot of these clubs are bigger than, and they're worldwide, by the way, but they're bigger than a lot of these other organized crime individuals, if you would, out of New York when they started their things. Now, I'm not saying that biker clubs are organized crime, okay? I'm just comparing the two. Clubs are so big now, worldwide, with chapters everywhere. You got to think logically, why would they want to have a sit-down? Why? Because the FBI, ATF are all over them here in the States? Well, they always gonna be because of the past reputations that they've had. So they're used to it. So why? What would be the advantage of sitting down besides calling off the feds, which they already know it's not going to happen? Now, a lot of clubs, they're organized in such a way where you have your internationals, your presidents, your nationals of the different continents, blah, blah, blah. So when one chapter, all it takes is one chapter to go to war against another club, and then the whole club as a whole is in that fight. Now, from my understanding, 81, they have a charter system where each charter has to vote to do it. But I think that has caused a lot of problems as well, because one chapter might be good with one club, but the other isn't. But you leave the other club no choice because they're under this hierarchy to go against them, which, you know, it is what it is. And it does make some problems going out because there's no structure on that one side. And every individual charter can make their own choices. Next thing you know, that one individual charter can declare war on another club and boom, the whole freaking thing's put into it because that's just the way it is. Now, in one of our next segments, because I'm going to go through, I think this history thing's important for everybody to understand. How it got to where it is today. And it's a lot more calmer. I cannot stress how much calmer it is from the 80s and 90s. Yes, Waco was bad, but I believe the police had a lot to do with Waco. That incident, no matter how horrifying it was, wouldn't compare to what happened in the 90s and 80s with the fighting between clubs. It was downright dirty back then. It was a whole different way of thinking. You got to remember, that thinking was because there wasn't this new age type of, you know, input, if you will. No, it was done the way it was done. If you didn't like it, you'd get a black eye or a good freaking kick in the butt, because the rules were the rules, man. And again, go to hooliganbiker.com. I talk about this stuff. I actually did that article on why clubs go to war with each other. Go over there, check it out. You'll get a better understanding of what I'm talking about here. So pass the video around, like it, subscribe, all that good stuff. Let me know what you guys think about doing this series. And also, I am thinking about doing, because my gearheads have been on me on this one, doing car reviews. And I think I'm going to do that, man, because I'm a gearhead. But that'd be a separate thing. I know a lot of bikers love the Working on cars, machines, trucks, whatever. Me personally, I love the lowrider scene, so that's my style. But you know, we'll get out there, do some car reviews. You know, the 2020 models coming up. See what you guys think of that type of stuff. But those are mostly for the gearheads on the channel. But until then, leave your comments, all that good noise, man. I'll talk to you later.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.